We're kicking down this motherfucking door, and we're doing that.
Let's get into it. If there's anything that could be haunted, for sure that fucking chair's haunted.
Then again, the internet always wins. The internet always wins.
Searching around about this dock, I found...
Let's be frank, there's piss on the floor.
Was pulled out of power, and he was murdered by firing squad. I'll start huffing paint. Three dudes in a dock. That's the one.
That is what it's called.
Welcome back for another week. This week, we are watching the documentary, The Gleaners and I. I almost fucking forgot that for a second. It's a special episode this week. It's two dudes and a dog.
Two dudes and a dog.
Instead of three dudes and a dock. We're watching the Agnes Varda 2000 documentary, The Gleaners and I. I'm here with Christian. Mitch is absent, and we have a special guest, Dog Maverick, today.
We'll take a picture and put it on Twitter or whatever we do now.
Yeah, we don't really do much of anything.
Just encode it in audio, and people can download it to their phones, and it'll end up like a picture, like a laser disc, but the reverse. I saw one of those recently.
A laser disc?
Yeah, shockingly large.
I don't know if I've ever seen a laser disc.
They're as big as an LP, but really? It's a double-sided DVD.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's a movie, but it looks like a giant CD with two sides.
Cool.
Yeah.
That's probably more interesting than the stock.
I don't know why this is rated so highly. I don't know why Agnes Varda continually gets like massive praise for her films.
Yeah. So I was just reading the IMDb trivia here, and it's included among the 1001 movies it's a very large list.
I have not seen 1,000 documentaries, at least.
But it's included in the 1,001 movies you must see before you die.
Wow.
It is, in 2022, for the first time, it was listed in the critics poll of Sights and Sounds list of the greatest films of all time under number 67.
I didn't mean to laugh there. So naturally.
Greatest films of all time. Number 67. Is this the 67th best film of all time?
No.
Yeah.
I like 1,000 movies to see before you die. I can think of 1,000 ways I'd like to die before I had to watch this again.
And in 2016, the film appeared at number 99 on the BBC's list of the 100 greatest films of the 21st century.
Yeah, but guess when this movie came out?
2000.
Yeah, so the year wasn't even out. And they're like, you know what? What's the best 100 movies ever? There was only 100 movies, and this almost came last.
No, that was in 2016.
It made that was in 2016?
Yeah.
Oh, 16 years for 100 movies?
Yeah.
I don't know, Varda. You're batting a little low there.
Yeah.
I think Sight and Sound is a fairly formidable cinema force.
And maybe, I don't know. Maybe it would have been a little bit more interesting if it hadn't have been in French, and because I'm probably a little bit stupid. And I find myself just like looking down at my phone and like, oh fuck, I don't understand what just happened.
Oh, she's saying words. Yeah. Oh fuck. Honestly, not a super coherent story. It's the classic gripe. I mean, you could look down from the screen to whatever, your feet, to see if you've got socks on today. And you could look back up at the screen and she might be filming herself
or
her hand closing in and around like a truck on the highway and
giving it the truck a hand job.
I'm fucking bored. Yeah. I'm bored and a little bit angry. I don't want it not real anger. Like there's not hate there, but fuck Agnes. Like this is my life's time. And this is not art, cute, interesting, relevant, unique. It's nothing. It's just wasting seven minutes of my fucking life.
I would say that, you know,
putting it off as art.
The act of gleaning is interesting in and of itself.
I thought that it was really neat.
But yeah, it's just like, I have a real problem with pretentiousness.
Yeah. That's my problem with this doc.
Yeah. Yep. And I feel like this is, I mean, like all artsy films are pretentious.
You know who Agnes Varda should interview is fucking Herzog.
Yeah.
I feel like Werner Herzog can't help but put himself in his own movies. And I know that I really, really like Sarah Polley's stories we tell.
Yeah.
But that's a completely different, like the point of that doc existing is very different. That Agnes turned on her camera and she said, how about we film people who pick up sort of the scraps of all kinds of society. Yeah. And then we look at scraps of society, how society uses things and then throws them to the dustbin. And then we get 7 minutes into the movie and she's filming herself in the mirror and she's taking pictures of herself and she's on her couch and she's putting her hand up to the lens and
because
fuck off. Like, what is this?
Because it's a brand new fandangled digital camera.
Yeah. I don't give a fuck about that. Like the process of making this documentary, there's nothing there. I know that we've recently off record had a conversation about how to make a documentary and whether you should include making that documentary in the story. I completely understand. I did back then, but I know now, especially after seeing this, that like how you make a documentary sometimes is not important to the documentary.
Right.
This is this is a good example.
And sometimes it can be. Sometimes it definitely can be. Like Tickled, you know.
Great example.
It's just like again, and then you have your documentary. Like her handy cam was really fucking moot because she had a film crew. They're filming because they filmed her using the handy cam.
Yeah.
Like if I had it all been filmed on the handy cam, sure, great.
Yeah.
Insert that into the story. But like
this is her first foray into handheld shit.
Yeah, 2% of it was filmed with the handy cam.
Mm-hmm. And like not super great artful shots, like really close ups of like dirty heart shaped potatoes. But like, I don't know. Like I read something about her saying that finding those heart shaped potatoes was total chance. Everything in a fucking documentary is total chance. If I set out with a camera to go film Fenway Park and I get there, that was a plan. But if I get there and it's gone, total fucking chance.
Yeah.
Going out to film people gleaning a potato field and then remarkably, you come across a potato with a familiar shape because they come in all sorts of fucking shapes and then you set out to find all those shapes. I don't know. That's not by chance. Also, I don't care. This feels like grade 9, like deliberately artsy, trying way too fucking hard, wearing black knit clothes and a beret and slick eyeglasses that don't have any lenses in them because you need to look artsier than you just feel. Yeah, she's the French Herzog.
Yeah.
But worse, like Herzog's fun to watch. At least his narration's kind of quirky and unique, but... Varda's just kind of boring. I don't know. I feel bad because she seems like a nice lady, if maybe not a little bit quirky. Conceited. Oh, yeah. Quirky.
Just quirky.
Yeah. But I wish that I could like them because I know that she's done a lot of stuff and I don't like to dislike anyone, but she gives me no choice.
And that's this episode.
Yeah. No. 7 minutes in, let's just turn the camera on ourselves and start fucking around.
It's like I was kind of excited for, other than it being like a foreign language doc, and that's going to sound really, you know, narrow-minded of me. But I just have a hard time with subtitles. And like the first...
Well, yeah, it's not like you didn't want to watch this because you think everyone that doesn't speak English is lesser.
Oh, yeah, no, that's right.
Oh, that's what it was.
No.
Oh, I nailed it. By accident, everyone. It's just the subtitles. It gets in the way.
So... Like, it listed that it was on Amazon Prime. It's not on Amazon Prime anymore.
Oh, I didn't see it there.
So I YouTubed it, and then, like, I'm watching it on YouTube, and I was like, oh, fuck, there's no subtitles. This is going to suck. This is going to be, like, an hour and 20 minutes of my life wasted, even more so.
Did you get subtitles eventually?
So, yeah, I was, like, 20 minutes, and I was like, what am I doing? Like, this doesn't make any sense.
Just closed captions.
No, no closed caption was not available on YouTube. I tried that. But anyway, then I found it on a website called like Thoughtful Watch or something like that. Or Watch Thoughtful.
Stupid fucking website.
And it had...
Why is this here?
It had closed caption.
Oh.
Or subtitles.
I recently decided to get the Criterion channel.
Yeah.
And it's there.
Yeah.
Of course it's fucking there. Everything she's done is there, but
yeah.
Yeah.
I don't get it.
I don't get it either. I will say when it was actually about gleaning and gleaners, Gleano and Gleanews, I thought it was pretty cool.
Yeah.
I like to see all the different ways that she found scavengers, like scavengers of appliances and materials, mm-hmm. non-food items, and then scavengers of food items, both in the field, fresh harvested or scavenged, I guess, from trash cans and elsewhere. I thought that that was really cool. And then she broke into an even deeper structural kind of scavenging, and they were driving along the road. It was when she found the paintings when they went to that antique store.
Yeah.
She's driving along and she sees a disused warehouse, like a derelict building, super big too. And then it struck me. I was like, this, like, that is also kind of not really the same. Like, you can glean, but what do you glean? That you can be a gleaner and you can glean stuff, but you can't really glean a whole broken warehouse, but it is in that category. You simply just can't take it home. Yeah. I can identify stuff. I can glean images in my life and locations and whatnot. But I thought that that was kind of neat, that she's taken it from just like literally the obvious stuff of gleaning food and non-food items that you can hold in your hand or take away on a fridge cart. But to recognize a disused warehouse also as technically of the category of gleanable items or scavengeable because it's been used and then like disused.
Yeah.
I thought that that was really neat. And then it got me thinking. I was like, because she moved from kind of the traditional sense of the word glean, which is like people that come along after the harvest to pick up the scraps and then
potatoes, corn,
whatever, and then grain. But she moved from sort of the traditional legitimate use of the word glean to, I guess it would be not non-traditional to say that French society builds into its laws those less fortunate they would consider gleaners. Because there was that priest that was talking about ancient French law from like 1554 builds into its harvesting laws and like scavenging laws those less fortunate can come along afterwards in these parameters.
The destitute.
Yeah, exactly. To pick up scraps and whatever else. And that still stands now almost in the same words.
Yeah. It's crazy that there's like actual set laws.
Yeah. I don't know if those exist in Canada.
I was going to ask you, how quickly do you think one of us would get shot if we just walked onto a farmer's field or into their greenhouse and start
not.
But that's what the part of this doc was, that she asked this lawyer, was like, a greenhouse, like, can someone go into a greenhouse and if there's leftover stuff? And they're like, he's like, yes, as long as they stay within the rule. So like between sun up and sundown.
And if it's unlocked, I suppose.
Yeah.
I must have missed that. See, that's the problem with subtitles sometimes. Yeah. You watch you the down film and then you.
Yeah, it was, she had a lawyer in the field and a lawyer in the street.
Oh.
And she asked a lawyer in the field and he's like, yeah, no,
That was the guy in the cabbage patch.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just missed that part. I just referenced it too. The 1554. That was the guy I was thinking of.
Yeah. But it had him in a couple different clips throughout the documentary.
Yeah. But French society builds this into itself, and laws very easily determine the way people think. And they typically most of the time don't question these things. They take the law to exercise or to depict some rigid rule of society. So if there's a law longstanding in French society that says people have the right, like French citizens have the right to glean, for lack of a better word, that you would grow up thinking that that's normal because that's the law.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty cool. I like it. I don't like the idea of that. They need to include this for those less fortunate because they could just go out and glean for themselves.
I mean, America kind of has their own version of the gleaners.
Do they?
Yeah.
American Pickers?
No, the Extreme Couponers.
Oh, fuck yeah, I guess. They glean for deals.
Buy $200 worth of groceries for 35 cents.
Yeah, the deal gleaners.
Yeah.
It's a gross set of words. Yeah, I liked that part of it. So when she looked at what was being gleaned and then the people that are doing it, and then she moved into things that couldn't technically be gleaned but can be considered scavengeable items, like a whole building. Or even, she didn't go into this, I don't think, unless I missed it, whole patches of land that are not being used for anything. We'd call it, in Canada, crown land. It's not commercial.
Owned by the government.
Yeah, it's just kind of there. It's just dirt with stuff naturally growing. There's no industry. There's no commercial, residential, anything. But that land, in a sense, if it was like scrub land, if there was no good for anything, sort of in a sense, like our way, way up tundra, there's mm-hmm. oil there, I guess, but yeah, it could be an oil gleaner. Why not? Petroleum gleaners.
That's called a Beverly Hillbilly.
Yeah. I thought that was a neat idea.
Yeah.
To move away from the obvious gleaning things. And then, it's going to sound shitty, but like, and then there's not the people that can be gleaned. You can't scavenge for people, but there are people who exist as effectively useless. That gleaning exists because there's a mass harvest or there's a mass use, and whatever gets left behind is considered useless by farmers or harvesters or whoever's going to do it, or people that just can go out and buy a new fridge. They would consider their old fridge useless. It's gone through the paces and I don't need it. I don't want it. I'm just going to give it away or sell it or break it or recycle it or whatever I'm going to do. But I'm doing that because it has become somehow useless. It doesn't serve its purpose anymore for any reason. But people, unfortunately, could be considered in that same category,
yeah.
Which is an interesting way to push this topic. That you can glean potatoes, you can glean fridges, you could kind of classify a building as gleanable and then push it right to the unfortunate extreme and glean a person. They're essentially useless. Society doesn't consider them to be valuable.
Like the guy with the master's degree.
Yeah.
The vegetarian. So he's like that? Really nerdy looking guy. He was gleaning vegetables and said he was a vegetarian. And he just like, it looks like a veggie stand. And like he's picks over, he picks up a thing of celery and he like bites off and he's like, oh yeah, that's okay. And he puts it in his bag. And he was an urban gleaner. Like he was going and he was talking. He's like, yeah, I'm a vegetarian. And he's like listening up. He's like, oh yeah, this has so many glucides and, I eat this because it gives me B12 and all this stuff. Okay. And she's like, oh, well, that's a little odd. And he's like, what? She's like, that you know so much nutritional information. He's like, well, I took biology. And then, so I think she asked him why he's gleaning. And he's like, well, I don't make a lot of money. I sell newspapers and brochures on the street. Huh. And, then he's like, yeah, I have a master's degree.
He's still doing this.
He worked as like a teacher's assistant for a little while, but then stopped doing that. And now he teaches like homeless people to read and write at a shelter and sells newspapers outside like a train station.
Huh. Interesting. Yeah. Was that like pretty close to the end?
Yeah.
Okay. I skipped out the last 10 minutes.
I don't know if it was that. It might have been. Might have been. Well, could have been.
I skipped out before that happened, at least. I had stuff to do. I was at work.
But you didn't catch the very artsy end, did you?
Oh, no. Unfortunately, I didn't.
She goes into this place that's selling paintings, and she found this very large... I feel like it was a museum. And this is where I don't get, like...
How this correlates.
Yeah, and why they did it. Like, it was a painting of gleaners. Mm. It was a bunch of women carrying wheat out of a field. Mm. And she's like, and I told them to bring it outside in the blustery wind. And like the gusts of wind blew it. And that was that. And it was just like these two women holding this painting outside and the wind's like blowing it. And then it ended.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
I couldn't have done better myself.
Yeah.
Yeah, I could have. Yeah. I mean, like I could have. I'm sorry, Agnes. I don't know. I don't know what it is about your fucking movies. This one has a follow-up, which is pretty cool.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't watch it. I just think that it's cool that she followed up because we talk about that a lot.
People, what's the follow-up called?
I think it's called The Gleaners and I 2 years later. And I think it's exactly what it sounds like. She revisits the topic. She revisits some of the people. And yeah, I think it's just another one. Well, you know, those digital handy cams are so handy cameras and it's just too easy, you know, to go out on site for 2 weeks at a time. And
it came out in 2002.
Yeah. Huh. Super easy to put together.
So it says, Agnes Varda returns to the people she met in her 2000 documentary on gleaning and meets some new people who were inspired by her first film.
Oh, wow. That's... Yeah, so there was one guy who was super inspiring, and I guess that this is the beauty of this documentary.
Was that the guy who lost his family?
No, that's not inspiring at all. Kind of. Well, I guess it's kind of sad, but it absolutely does not inspire me to do anything like he did. But the guy who has a job, he always wears rubber boots. He's scavenging in the back streets of some French town. But he does it for ethical reasons that so much food goes to waste. And I can't agree more. I mean, it's just, it's horrible that he sees like, well, no, this wasn't that guy, but the principle stands that the guy who lost his whole family just 2 years before, I assume, to some kind of drinking thing.
It was exactly a drinking thing. He said he got pulled over. The cop gave him a breathalyzer and found out he was drunk. Yeah. And his wife said, fuck you, took the kids and left. And he hasn't seen them in 2 years.
Yeah, well, fair enough.
And now he's a gypsy.
Yeah.
Literally.
Yeah. But he finds like cheese that's not even expired.
Yeah.
How the fuck does that make sense? And then he hit the nail on the head that they have to turn over like inventory.
Yeah.
You've got to keep up with like ordering new shipments of cheese. We'll just use that as an example. But you can't just stack up and like, there's this fresh cheese, but
that's why you put it at 50% off.
Exactly. But then I guess that's what our grocery stores do for sure. I love that shelf.
I go in the morning, stop at the grocery store on the way home, or way to work and pick up a Caesar salad that I'm going to eat for lunch that day. It's 50% off because that's the last day they can sell it.
Yeah.
It's still fine.
Of course it would be fine 2 days from now.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just horrible to see that kind of stuff. I thought that was great. That was inspiring.
Yeah.
But you know, what wasn't inspiring is the dance of the lens cap.
Oh yeah.
That was fucking dumb. Like Agnes, this is my life. Like you're convincing me. You've told me, hey, I've got a cool documentary about like the scavengers of society, scavenging the discarded stuff.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Okay. I'll watch it. I'll set aside time deliberately. I'm not going to stumble into my TV's already playing this and I also have to watch it for a podcast. That's never going to happen. So I'll set aside time. I'll watch it. I'll skip the last 10 minutes, but you've told me that you have something good for me, that this is worth my time. Mm-hmm. Don't do me like this. you forgot to turn your camera off and the lens cap was dangling from its string. So you said, oh my God, What a beautiful mistake. No, that's bullshit. It's digital. Delete it. Who cares? This isn't film that you can't afford to waste. Fucking wipe it. Who gives a shit? Now it's funny, I guess, like if you want it like in random culture now for the internet. Yeah. Clip that out. Put it on YouTube. Throw some quirky
Benny Hill
music. So, yeah, exactly. Whatever, man, do fucking whatever you want. If someone wants to spend 3 minutes watching a lens cap dangle around by Agnes Varda's hip to Benny Hill, fucking be my guest. But Agnes told me that she had a documentary about gleaning and her experiences with them. I know I'm going to eat the words and say that that was one of her experiences with gleaners.
No, it wasn't.
No, it wasn't. Exactly, it wasn't. I don't give a fuck if anyone has a problem with that. But like, that's the kind of shit about a Varda documentary that I just can't seem to be okay with. And it kind of ruins it for
yeah.
me. I don't know. Like, I wish that this was just pure and simple, straightforward, cool and artful. I just like, I'm not against art and creative uses of camera angles and timing and people,
yeah.
whatever. That's cool. But like, that has nothing to do with it.
No,
that's just and stupid.
The shot of her in the mirror doing her hair.
Yeah. What is this? Talking about how she's getting old and then filming her hand super close. Mm-hmm. I know that sucks, but like focus, Agnes, you have to focus for me. Just do it. But
maybe she had undiagnosed ADHD.
I hope so. She seems like kind of one of those people. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like they do cool stuff. They're out there 2 weeks at a time, like gleaning footage of which she made a note. And so did I. She said that there's no law regarding gleaning images and sounds and information. That's changed. That's definitely changed. You like with the ubiquity of cameras, and it always kind of was this case. Like, if you were a journalist, I guess, but like you'd still have to go get people's consent for an interview. You couldn't just like film their face up close after they're crawling out of a car or a crash and then use that without asking them if that's okay with them. But yeah, I know what she means, but like she's digitally filming things while she's in her car. And then she says, well, there's no law against what I'm doing now. And I'm gleaning images and information and sound and it's beautiful. But like that's changed. That's definitely yeah. changed. Or maybe she just doesn't know, but
she gets arrested and she's putting the camera at herself.
Yeah. All I'm doing is gleaning, officer. I'm allowed to do that. I can
between glean an sun image. Up and sundown.
Yeah. This is France, is it not? Yeah. I thought that was interesting. I made a note of that. Yeah. I liked the contrasts in this documentary, kind of like what we saw in Honeyland.
Yeah.
There's a great contrast between the useful and the useless, the coveted and then the discarded, the good and the bad. The scale up from sort of generic things that you just wouldn't even think of, potatoes, apples, grapes, and then appliances, and then buildings, and then even people. I thought yeah. like great scale, good conceptual thematic scale. I guess there was a great contrast between good documentary filmmaking here and yeah. in the same breath, bad documentary filmmaking.
For sure. Both within the same documentary.
Yeah. Maybe this is more important than I realized. Maybe Sights and Sounds is onto something.
No, I don't think they are.
No. If we read the review, they would not say this is a meaningful documentary because it's both very good and very bad. Yeah. I doubt
again,
they would say that.
Yeah. I was really interested because again, like you said, it's a cool concept. Like it's something that you don't think of people doing. Like, obviously, you know, homeless people have to scrounge and scavenge for food and stuff, but like, you don't think of someone going out into a field after a harvest and the people being like, yeah, have at her.
Yeah. It seems like it's against the rules.
Yeah. But and
I don't think it really would be.
The one guy who owned the winery basically like helps them out. Like he welcomes them on. And
yeah. I like the guy that, had the apple orchard too. He's like, I pay my guys well. They strip the trees as best as possible, but probably they leave like 10 tons of apples behind, and apples are heavy. It sounds like a big number, but some of those people were taking away like 200 pounds worth of apples.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
He says something about 400 tons
or 4,500 tons a year or something, but he leaves probably 10 on the trees just by accident.
Yeah.
Yeah. But like he takes people's license plate numbers and like models of
registers them
and they can take whatever they want. He doesn't give a shit. He thinks it's great. It's got to be used. And everyone out there doing that seems to be doing it for the right reasons too. They say that like, they can't help but feel bad that this stuff is going to sit on the tree and go to waste.
Yeah.
It's the waste aspect that is sad about this all.
That's why, like, I switched to one of those, like grocery boxing, like you get four meals, like they send you all the ingredients and with the instructions you cook it. Cause you know, I was buying groceries and I was throwing out like half of them.
Totally.
Not half, but that's probably an exaggeration. But
you're throwing out more than you were okay with.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm like, I'm spending $300 like a week in groceries.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I just either I don't get to making something or like that. And, or I make too much of something.
I think they come with recipes too, right?
Yeah. So yeah. Like so they're set meals. So like last week I had like a, I forget which one, like one of them was like a chicken and mushroom thing. So it gives you two chicken breasts, enough mushrooms for two servings.
Yeah.
And it gives you like the right portion amount instead of like, you know, I go and I make, you know, a lasagna. Well, I make enough lasagna for like five people
for four days.
I eat it for dinner one night and lunch the next day. And then like, I'm like, oh, I really fucking don't want lasagna anymore.
Yeah.
So then it just goes to waste and gets thrown out.
We live such fucking luxurious lives.
I know.
We're like fresh homemade lasagna. I've had it twice. Fuck it.
Yeah.
I don't want that again. Right. Like, my life needs to be more varied than that.
And like I could probably freeze it, but yeah, like it's.
Yeah. It won't be the same.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel bad. I'm in the same boat. It's hard to buy groceries for not like a whole big family. I assume that like your family was at least four people, five people, but like so was mine. And I think you grow up with that kind of, amount. Like you look in the fridge and you're like, oh, that doesn't look like enough food,
but
it's just me and like maybe one other person or like two other people and a dog maybe, but like that's still way too much food. Yeah. You buy for four, just not even realizing.
Yeah.
It's hard to cut the portions down too.
Absolutely.
Sometimes you just can't go through that much milk in a week or whatever it is.
Right. Or bread's a huge thing.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
You should switch to sourdough. It doesn't go bad so fast.
Although I would have a very hard time eating dumpster bread.
Hmm.
I would. I'm a little bougie like that.
I'd be super down. I've never had the need to do it, I guess. I wouldn't be against it. I guess that's
it. So if I went and like found a loaf of dumpster bread and was like, hey, Christian, here's some dumpster bread. You're like, yeah, let's have some dumpster sandwiches.
I'm going to look it over. And if it's like covered in mold, no, of course. But like if there's like a little spot here and there, pick them off, whatever.
No.
No, you're not down?
No. I don't trust what else is in the dumpster. I guess
some super rotten stuff could easily taint that in a way that you wouldn't tell, like it brushed up against rotten chicken or something. Oh, I've bought like fresh chicken wings. Mitch and I have done this, brought them back, cut them out of the package. And like, it just wafts of that like rotten chicken fat.
Yeah.
Smell. It's just not good. Chicken shouldn't smell like anything. If anyone out there is cooking chicken that smells like something before you cook it, fucking good luck. You've got 24 hours before you're dead. But like, yeah, but like that was fresh.
Yeah.
That was like in the package. It didn't register as expired. But yeah, still rotten. So like you throw that in a dumpster, brushes up against some bread and you'd never know unless you smell your bread. But
couldn't do dumpster bread. Definitely couldn't do dumpster cheese.
If it was like vacuum packed.
Sure. Yeah.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
If it was like a bag of pre-shred, no way.
I still couldn't wrap my head around it. I don't think even
cheese is mold though. It's just milk gone bad.
Yeah. And I get it. And I love cheese. Yeah,
I mean, that first guy to eat cheese was fucking hungry. He's like, I had milk, but fuck, it's gone all kind of mushy and shit. I got to eat it. Well, I'm so hungry.
That's like, I had a conversation with a friend a week or so ago about cheese curds. And like, they're like, oh, I don't know what you're talking about. I was like, what do you mean? You don't know what I'm talking about? Like cheese curds. Like, this is a Canadian friend.
What?
We didn't know what cheese curds. And I was
where do
like,
they live?
I was like, you can buy cheese curds literally at any grocery store. Like, no, I can't. They looked on their phone with their app. They're like, I can't get cheese curd delivered.
Oh my God. Yeah. Go to the fucking store.
No, but apparently like,
I guess
cheese curd.
I mean, Walmart wouldn't have cheese curd.
They do.
They do?
They do.
Oh.
Absolutely they do.
Oh, fuck. I haven't been to Walmart in a while. I don't know.
Yeah. Apparently not in Toronto, though.
Weird.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, cheese curd is just cheese that hasn't been compressed into a brick.
Yeah, it's just young cheese.
Yeah. But not knowing what cheese curd is.
Well, I guess they knew what it was.
It just wasn't available to them.
I exaggerated a little bit.
Like they couldn't go into the dumpster behind their local Walmart.
They didn't know of any other uses for it other than poutine.
Oh.
Like
just to eat a bag?
You just eat a bag of cheese curds? It's like, fuck yeah, you do.
Fuck, you cut yourself a couple slices of cheese.
That's what I said. Like you wouldn't just like eat cheese off a block. Cause like, no, I would cut myself a couple things of cheese and I would eat it.
You ever just,
like, eat cheese by yourself? I was like, yeah, or with crackers.
You don't knock a knob off of the block and like walk around like stick of butter
with a little bit of chocolate.
Whoa.
Oh yeah.
Oh man.
I'm going to fucking blow your mind. Right. So like cut yourself with like a little chunk of marble cheese.
Marble.
Yeah.
All right. You're losing me.
And like, or old cheese would be better, I guess. Old cheese. And like eat like a little like thing like.
Like a little slice?
Yeah, of just like milk chocolate.
Like a little Hershey bar?
And then pop the cheese in your mouth.
Hershey and Wilton's, if you're listening right now,
yeah.
Sponsor me up.
That's right.
I'm down. That sounds great. That sounds like a mouthful of cheesecake.
Like
chocolate cheesecake.
People don't understand the sweet and the salty as well as they should. Like,
no, they don't.
I'm going to either make you barf or make you very intrigued at this next one.
Oh, you've got more.
Toast with Cheese Whiz,
okay.
And strawberry or raspberry jam. So good.
Oh,
so good.
No, everyone, this is the sound of me leaving.
Yeah. No, it's the sweet and the salty, man.
Yeah. No, I guess I follow.
It's so good.
I would never look at what that, like in my fridge, if I've got a jar of Cheese Whiz and a jar of strawberry jam, and they're sitting right beside each other, and I've got
mine toast. Is sitting right beside each other because that's all I use it for. You
grab them out of caddy, they're like together.
Yeah, that's all I use it for.
I would, if I made myself a piece of toast and then I looked in the fridge and I'm like, all right, what am I going to have? And I see Cheese Whiz and jam, I would pick one.
No, you should totally try it.
I wouldn't be like, oh my God, what a good idea.
You should totally try it.
Did someone tell you to do this or did you just try it?
It'll change your life. You know what? I've done it ever since I was a kid and I don't remember who told me to.
I would bet no one did. Your mom saw you do it and she was like, fuck them.
No, I feel like someone was like, here, I've tried this and it was really good.
Peanut butter pickle thing. Same thing.
See, yeah.
I've never done it.
I've never tried either, but I'm sure I could be down with it.
Mm.
See, that's not really salt and sweet though.
I would feel bad.
That's like salty and tangy.
Yeah. Oh, that's true.
And I don't know if salty and tangy are
acid, I suppose.
Yeah.
Salt, fat, acid, heat.
The moral of the story, I won't eat dumpster cheese, but I will eat Cheese Whiz and jam on toast.
Wow. You eat a luxurious form of dumpster cheese.
Yeah.
God damn. Yeah.
Yeah.
I would definitely eat dumpster food, but like what I right now drive home, stop off at the metro, go out back and be like, all right,
so lunch. Like,
I don't think so. Like it's a desperation thing.
Have you ever had Doer's Donuts?
Yeah.
So like if you knew Doer's threw out their donuts at the end of every day at like 4:30, and you're like, fuck, they're just day old donuts and they might be in a bag.
What are you saying to me?
Would you go to their dumpster at like 4:30 and be like, fuck, I know they just threw those in there. Boom. Grab a bag of Doer's Donuts.
100%.
Yeah. Nah, I couldn't do it.
Really?
Yeah. No.
Even knowing, like watching the guy be like, all right, here's the day gone. Boo. Dumpster donuts. And then you go in, you're like, they haven't like the bag didn't get abrased open a little bit and touch the side of the rusty bin. And there's no like trash water at the bottom that they splashed in. You still wouldn't do it?
What? No, couldn't do it.
We used to, in high school, we used to take our lunch breaks, zip over on our skateboards to an old warehouse where Doritos used to do their truck transfers. And they would, it was kind of a half-ass holding facility. They would drop off trucks and trucks of chips and then smaller, like Lay's, Frito, whatever trucks would go out and drop them off to stores. But those guys would be in charge of discarding expired bags, and they would just put them in the dumpster. They're like whole bags, not popped, not ripped and shredded, crushed. They would just put whole bags in the dumpster, like by the box. So we would go there at lunch.
I could probably get more on board with that.
I took like 6 bags of Doritos home, and I think that's why I like Doritos now versus like regular potato chips. I'm like, they're just, they've got the sweet taste of free
of
in dumpster, my mind.
Dumpster Doritos.
Yeah. Sometimes they were super expired though, like months, but
do they really go bad? Like,
no way. It's not even food.
Yeah.
No, it's not food. It's just salt, old cheese dust from somewhere. I assume the floor of Empire Cheese here in Belleville. And
yeah.
Yeah.
No. Yeah, no, I
have you ever taken like recycling or trash or something on the end of someone's driveway? Have you ever been like driving by and you're like, holy fuck, there's a chair. Just take the chair.
No.
Really?
Yeah.
I've definitely done that before.
Yeah. See, that I would do. Like if someone's throwing something out, like
I would not do it with a couch. No couches, no mattresses. I would do it with
bed bugs.
Leather? Oh, water. I was thinking like rotten water, like rainwater that sits and sits in someone's 10-year-old fart pillow. That's just gross.
Yeah.
And bed bugs.
Yeah.
But yeah, I've definitely done it with a chair. Actually, I have a chair in my apartment right now. It's like a double seater. Like it looks like the, like a waiting room chair for a psychologist's office. Yeah,
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. From the '70s. But it's cool. I mean, it's a double wide like waiting room chair with no bar in between.
Yeah.
So like it's just for a really, really super wide chair for, So I grabbed it. I'm like, that's a sweet chair. Matches the color of my 80s apartment anyways. So
yeah. See, like, yeah, I'm
cool.
I'm 100% on board with that kind of stuff. Like, free cycling.
Free cycling. So sure.
There used to be a show on Discovery, I believe, called Free Cyclers or something like that. And it's like people would, you know, go dumpster dive for like a broken bike and they would take this bike and like upcycle it. Like they would fix it up and
they would upcycle a bicycle. That's cool.
It was a bad example, but like,
that's art.
But they would take it and use it for sculptures or,
that kind of shit.
They would fix it up and,
just put it back on the road.
Yeah.
There's a huge culture, at least around here, of all the dumps I go to. there's a group of people. Always, they're not the same people. They don't like dump hop like we pub crawl. But there's always people at these waste disposal facilities that I go to for just household shit and for work sometimes. That they hang out there and they kind of like they're just leaning against the doorway when you like back your truck in. And then they're like looking in the back of your truck to see what you got. And I have seen them like pretty quickly land on my stuff that I've just dumped, pick through it. And
so
they take whatever they take.
There's always stories of like, you know, cause sometimes people don't know what they have.
Yeah.
Like, and they just think it's junk, but
I do that with country records.
Yeah.
Just throw them in the garbage. Fuck them.
Yeah. There's always stories of, you know, someone finding this like priceless thing in the dump.
I was just earlier today. I was in a museum in Trenton, and I saw a wooden chair. It looks pretty nondescript, but it was a chair carved under orders from the original Queen Victoria for all the senators in Canada in like 1897. Pretty normal looking chair, but there are only 2 left now, I think probably because senators took these chairs home. They were personal gifts.
Yeah.
Put it in your office, take it home, do whatever, burn it, eat it. I don't think she cared. It wasn't like it was appointed to be in their Senate office, but there's only 2 now, but there were and are like hundreds of senators.
Yeah.
I think that kind of stuff, like if you see an old wooden chair at a dump, unless you're kind of looking for it or unless you know what, like if you've got a great history of wooden Canadian chairs, I don't know, you would never know about this chair, but you see it in the dump, you see it next to this cool 70s psychologist's waiting room double wide chair that I took. Maybe there was a wooden chair there that was fucking carved by Queen Victoria as a gift from...
Can you just imagine her, like a big old lady carving this wooden chair?
I can. I can, yeah. That was a pretty clear picture in my mind just then. Yeah, but I mean, unless you know, but I mean, that's kind of, that's cool stuff. That's stuff that gets lost to history. And
right.
It's a shame to see it go.
Well,
we can't keep everything.
But. They have that show, Antiques Roadshow.
Exactly.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
That's like the 95-year-old in me, like screaming, like, you fucking want to watch Antiques Roadshow.
I got nothing going on a Friday night.
Yeah, that's like the 95-year-old person inside me that just fucking loves that show. And it's like
it's just prep. You're just prepping.
Yeah. And it's these people like have this antique that they think is, you know, might be worth a couple bucks, and it ends up being worth like $50,000.
It's a Fabergé egg. Yeah. I think so in my notes, I've neglected to say one thing. I thought it was an interesting thing to point out. Maybe more psychologically and just a tad bit philosophically, but the very beginning of the documentary, within like 5 minutes, there's a gleaner or maybe a farmer. I can't remember who he really was, but, he was saying that he loves it when the farm equipment breaks down, because then he and his gleaning buddies, kind of like get kicked into high gear. Like they call in the reserves. And they go out and harvest potatoes. And he was fucking stoked. It was like he was telling us about that one time that he did blow with Mick Jagger in the back of the fucking Odeon. And I was like, it's kind of sad. I don't know really what I conclusively think about it. But to see someone light up against a machine that broke down, because now he, the machine broke down, but I'm not yet broken,
right?
And useless completely. Now I get called in to do the work that this machine has literally taken out of my hands. I dig for potatoes, I put them in a bucket. This machine digs also for potatoes and puts them in a really big fucking bucket on the back of four wheels. But this guy was stoked that he got to work his fingers to the bone, pulling potatoes out of 3 feet of dirt just because a machine broke down. But I don't know what he would be doing. I think he would be gleaning. If the machine was up and running, he'd be picking up the leftovers, which isn't so sad. I mean, it's a worthwhile thing to do. Don't waste. That's the moral of this whole story, Doc. But I just thought it was interesting, and it spurred a lot of thinking that that guy was he was ready to do backbreaking work at a moment's notice, and to just be useful again, really useful, like he feels like he is in his heart. And I was like, that's fucking tragic. Like, he's just desperate to do something.
Yeah.
To just fit in somewhere. And I don't know. I don't want to get like too nuts about this, but like, that's like the Marxist alienation from your work. Not exactly. But like, if you're driving a tractor and you're pulling potatoes out of the ground, I don't really know how connected you really feel to your work. Or if you're just pushing a lever back and forth and somehow you're making Nike shoes, there's no fucking way that you give a shit about any one pair of shoes or the other.
Yeah.
But if you're like a classic, what do they call it, cobbler, like you make like leather soled shoes with like the little nails in them and stuff. And you go to your lace guy, 'cause he's the rope maker, and you get fine, nice rope for shoelaces. And it just, I don't know. It's just sad. It was sad to see that guy light up for his chance to die for a validating purpose.
Right.
For work. And it wasn't even like art or war. It was work. And he was stoked. He's like, finally, this machine broke. I can pick potatoes too. I'm not dead yet.
Just goes in and...
fuck, man. Like...
sabotages the machines.
Yeah. Like, do you imagine? Like, yeah, you're a little like activist. You're like, fuck the machines, man. I want to pick the potatoes. Be like, no, fuck the machines. And then go... paint a picture or something. Be beautiful, but he's just working.
We need him when Skynet takes over, which it's going to.
Yeah. That could, yeah, he's going to do some work. He's ready for it.
Okay, I have picked our next documentary, and I'm a little excited about this one. I think it's going to be fun.
What did you get?
It's called Circus of Books.
Circus of Books?
Yeah.
I didn't know you could read.
It's about a porn store.
Oh.
Porn bookstore.
Fuck. This sounds familiar. Yeah,
it's a Netflix doc, so the synopsis for it says, in 1976, Karen and Barry Mason had fallen on hard times and were looking for a way to support their young family when they answered an ad in the LA Times. Larry Flint was seeking distributors for Hustler magazine.
Oh, shit.
What was expected to be a brief sideline led to their becoming fully immersed in the LGBT community as they took over a local store, Circus of Books.
No shit. I think that I've just heard this because I had Netflix for a while and this came out when I was still subscribed. So that's fucking cool. I didn't watch this when I had the chance. Sweet. Circus of Books.
And now you won't watch it because it's on Netflix.
Yeah, I don't have it. So I'll have to peer through your window again.
Yeah, you guys can come over and watch it.
Cool. This sounds great. This is a really neat story.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, we'll be back. I think Larry Flint's actually in it.
No shit.
Yeah.
Oh, that'd be kind of cool. Do you think Maverick is going to watch this one, you lazy dog?
No, he's going back home on Sunday.
Good.
Yeah. I'm babysitting my sister's dogs. And yeah. And he's very needy. Wanted to hang in here.
He can't read. Circus of Books is lost on him.
Okay, so yeah, we'll be back next week with hopefully Mitch back as well.
Yeah.
And some Circus of Books. Yeah, fuck them.
Cool.
Okay, thanks for listening, everyone.
Later.